So welcome, everybody. Thanks. So the plan I was going to do tonight was I really was doing on Shabbos. I learned with some of the fellows, we the Sugya, the Gemara, and Baba Kama, and Daf Sama Chomer Aleph about Magefa, about Dever. And it turns out that, this is very new to us, the idea of a plague. But it's not new to the world, and it's not new to Chazal. And there is a Gemara, so we figured that the Gemara, which kind of talks about it, and goes through different ways that I'll treat it in my Magefa and things of that sort. So my plan tonight was to kind of go through that Gemara, but at the same time, someone mentioned to me that it could be that, that these times are difficult for everybody. It could be that people would want to discuss, different ideas, different questions, different thoughts about the situation that we're under. And I don't really feel equipped to answer, all the questions, but at least maybe have a conversation, have a discussion. We could see where it goes. So I don't know. If anyone wants to do that, we could try, and then we'll see if we get to the Gemara or not. But again, I have, I could discuss my thoughts, but I think of it more as a discussion than as just a question and answer. If anyone has any thoughts, any questions, any things they want to talk about, we could start with that, and then after time permitting, we could end up going to the Gemara. Okay, so does anyone want to start with anything?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, in terms of everybody's calling it a plague, and there are certain halachic responses to plagues, et cetera. So, first, how do we define a plague in halacha, and would this really qualify? Because at this point, we're being warned that it could be deadly, but, it's so far it's not more deadly than the regular flu, which kills 30,000 people a year, or other diseases that kill, tens of thousands of people. But right now they're telling us it could be very dangerous. So is this,
right.
I guess that's the question.
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a Gemara. We absolutely looked. There are halachic definitions of Dever. We did the figure a little bit. And it turns out that the amount of people, the technical definition of Dever, which is brought down in the Rama and brought down in the figures, does include many, many people dying, many more than would seem feasible in this plague. It ended up being like in a city of 500, I think it was 3 people die in 3 consecutive days, and it scales up. And we did some back-of-the-envelope calculations. It ended up being like, in the state of New York, you'd have to have like 76,000 people dying in 3 days. Something like, crazy like that. So it seemed, again, I don't know, it's not clear that, at least that was just by the technical halacha, that's what it seemed. It's not clear if that was, maybe in those times where people didn't live as long and people were, the point is it seems to be it has to be something which is outside of the ordinary. And if people, there was a shorter mortality. And it could be that in those times, maybe you needed to have very large numbers for it to be clearly something out of the ordinary and something which is worth making a fast about or worth blowing the mitzvah chatzotros. But so again, I don't know. That's like on a technical halachic definition. It doesn't quite seem from the sugya I presented that this could fit into those criteria. And at the same time, it does seem that this is, and again, I don't know, on a practical level, it seems like an etzar. It's certainly a potential to kill many, many people. It's a potential to have a run on the hospitals. It's a potential to, lead to what you see in these other countries like in Italy and China. It's killed a lot of people. And it is certainly very contagious. I think it's more contagious than the flu. I think it has a higher mortality rate than the flu. So, I don't know how much it matters exactly what we call it on a technical level. It's certainly a time which is, very intense and has a lot of potential negative consequences on our society. And it's something that we, again, have to take seriously. And I think it's an opportunity. It certainly shakes our world. And it certainly, it prevents us from going on in our ordinary way. And as such, I think it's something, it could be a cause, at least a cause of tefillah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will stop this. And a cause of us to do tshuva and ma'asim tovim and try to use it as an opportunity to better ourselves. because hopefully that's the response. It's certainly out of the ordinary, and it's certainly more. And I don't really think the numbers, again, I'm not an expert, and I just don't think the numbers really end up like the flu. I think it's much more contagious and more deadly than that. So I guess we'll see what happens, but it seems to be that the world at large, the medical community at large, seems to be treating it very seriously. So the experts are treating it as such, so I think we should as well. Yeah. But again, I'm not sure what the nafkamina is, what word we use for it, but, maybe there's some nafkaminas, some differences practically, but I think, again, it is serious, and it's something that we should take as such.
I guess one of the nafkaminas that I saw some people arguing about was if it's really if it's the time of a plague, I think there's an isser to fast, yet people are also saying it's time to fast. So, and I don't think it's the type of plague where you can't fast because okay. It's a big thing.
Oh, but, I see.
What?
There is an isser to fast. I'm not aware of that. There's an isser to fast when there's a plague.
I that's what somebody was quoting. I didn't look up there.
I didn't come across that. That's what's interesting, I find, is, there is a lot of Torah about plagues. It's just we don't really do them. And when we come across them, we kind of don't pay that much attention to it because it's something which we never fathomed as being relatable to us. We always have this, I myself had this illusion that in modernity, things like that just don't happen anymore. That's like a thing of the past. But now we're all sophisticated and we have technology and all that, and these things don't really happen. And I think, as such, there are certain parts of Gemaras which we don't even look at seriously. But I think as now that, is it also the fast in a plague? Whoever heard of anything like that? I don't know. Maybe people, people do, I'm sure. But I never heard of that. I have in the past, I've been looking into different things about Torah over the past few weeks or months or whatever it is. But I'm not aware of that. So, again, there are halakhic questions involved. I guess I was wondering about that, about the fast. I know they have in Israel, they're having a half-day fast tomorrow. But they're, I don't know. I was wondering if maybe the reason why they're not making it a real fast is because maybe they're worried about people who are at risk. And maybe, I don't know. So, these are hard decisions. What have they technically categorized it and all that. So, I don't know. Okay. Any other questions?
Kelly, what's a nafkamina? I know what a havamina is. What's
a practical difference.
Oh.
Practical ramifications.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Would you say that it's like a tragedy that, you have Talmud Torah of the Rabban that's sort of just so... so minimized compared to how it normally is. Is that like a huge, would you say that's even worse than the Magepa?
Worse than the Magepa or worse than the Magepa?
Does that seem worse than the Magepa?
Does it seem worse than the Magepa?
It's
bad. I mean, that's certainly bad. It's like, there's a lot of Torah which is unable to be accomplished, and people aren't able to be involved in Torah. And that's, our lifeline is Torah, and unfortunately, we are prevented from being involved in that. At the same time, I do think it's amazing nowadays, like, for instance, this call we're having now, and again, every shul, every yeshiva, everything, I'm sure you're all getting emails and WhatsApps and this and that and the other thing about different shiurim, different opportunities for Talmud Torah. So, I mean, I think we're fortunate that we're able to pretty much, if a person wants to learn Torah, then we have great opportunities to be able to do so despite the difficult situation. Again, in my house, we have 6 different video conferences happening simultaneously throughout the day. So school continues, yeshivas can continue, shiurim can continue. And I think we are, again, that is something we're fortunate. I assume in the time of the Black Plague, for example, there's not much of any learning going on. I mean, it's just each person by themselves in the house. And, I don't know the history, but, I would assume there's something to that fact. So I think that is something we could feel happy about, that to some extent we could really use this as an opportunity to, a lot of us are home, a lot of us have less commute time, different jobs, so it is a good opportunity for us to be able to double down in our involvement in Talmud Torah and really incorporate Torah into our lives in a greater way. But again, because the Beis Medrash is certainly a big impetus for people to learn, and that is unfortunate that we, and that is a negative of the Magifa that is taking us away from that. But again, there's, again, fortunately, a situation where we could, in a certain sense, work around that. You know, and different people, for us, some people more so than for other people, you know. Some people who are very used to learning in a big base measures type of a setting might find it very hard to learn in the all known. But, you know, depends on the person, I guess. Yeah. Okay, someone else?
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so Rebbe had mentioned in his Q&A that now it's like time to do teshuva. But I was wondering how it works if only some members of Klal Yisrael take this opportunity to like do teshuva and not everyone does. Like, then how would Hashem's Hashgacha relate to us as like a nation in a situation if the Jews are like not all united in like their behavior?
Right. Yeah. That's a good question, I know. I was wondering about that also. I mean, I think, look, we don't know God's Cheshbon us. We don't really know, you know, what the factors are which are bringing about, which is making us, the world, the Klal Yisrael, deserving of this situation. Obviously, we know it's tied to chet, tied to sins. If we are perfect, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would prevent such a thing from happening. And that's the Gemara, which actually we're going to do. It says, the first thing it says, Ein Paranas Ba'ala Olam, El Adesman Sharashan Ba'alam. Bad doesn't come to the world unless there's Rashan in the world. So I think to some extent, we know that there's Sarva Onesh, and God is in control of the world, and he could prevent this from allowing it to happen. Is that indicates that there's sin, and therefore it's a call for us, for the world, the Kali Yisrael, us, to be Tshuva. Now, what does it take to make it go away? Tshuva, I mean, obviously the more tshuva, the better. But we exist within our, you know, every person exists in their own sphere. So every person is the yachid, and they could do tshuva in themselves. That's certainly a person has control over. Every person exists as an element of a family, exists as an element of a community, as part of, you know, a city. And to whatever degree each person's sphere of influence extends, that the person could be involved in trying to do tshuva. Now, there are going to be segments of the population and of Klal Yisrael who don't do so and who unfortunately don't care or whatever, or they're just to respond, you know, in a way which is not taking God into account. I mean, that's true, and that's God's judgment, so to speak, of to what's necessary to, you know, to remove it. We just know the solution for us is there is a mitzvah, as Rabbi was talking about last time, is there is a mitzvah of doing tshuva and calling out to Hashem and for Hashem to and whoever's on, if someone hit mute, it's kind of noisy back there. A lot of background noise. If someone can mute themselves, please. Someone on mute, there's someone there with in the background there. Let's see here. Okay, let's see. Yeah. So so there's definitely there's a lot of despite the fact there might be people who aren't doing tshuva, I don't really see how that affects us on the practical level. Each person, we could try to do it for ourselves, and whoever we can impact, and whatever groups we happen to find ourselves in, that could have a proper perspective, and that's all we could do. And hopefully, it's enough. But, you know, that's out of our sphere, I think. We just know what the mitzvah is and what the response is, and we have to do what's right, irrespective of whether or not, you know, other people or other communities do or don't respond. Unless we can influence them. If we can influence them, then great.
Right, Fader, on that point, I feel like there's a Mishnah or a Gemara that talks about, like, by Rosh Hashanah, that each person is supposed to think of themselves as a Beinonis and that the world is in the balance and that each person's tshuva could possibly save the world. So
you
could do.
Yes, right. That's true. That's excellent point. Right. It says every person should view themselves like they're 50-50. They're right in the middle. And one mitzvah could tip the balance. And the world also, you should view that the whole world is 50-50. And your one mitzvah could tip the balance. Which I think the point is, exactly, is that we don't know God's calculations. We don't know what it takes. We do know that there is a negative, the decree against us, against the world. God allowed as Chazal say, was Nitenu Shus L'Mashlis Lavo. God allowed, he gave permission to the destroyer virus to come, to spread. And that indicates that, that we're, as a world, as a nation, we're not off the par. But how far off are we, and what does it take? We don't know. Therefore, the proper mindset is to view yourself, as Chazal teach us, is to view ourselves as 50-50, and the whole world is 50-50. And maybe it just takes our little tshuva to make a difference. We don't know. Bottom line is the calculation is outside of our sphere. So it's a call for us to do our actions. And if each person has that attitude, and I think the world at large does make a change, and the communities at large do make a change. Yeah. Good point. Thank you, Ari. Yeah, okay. Someone
thank
else?
You.
Yeah, thank you. Good question, Yael.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I say in Mitzrayim, so when the Jews, the Yishmael came and knocked us on in Perek Bey's Chaf Dalet, they called out. So the Sforno says it was only Tfilas Kisasam, Shesbalo, Azatika. There was only a small amount that called out. And as a response to that small amount that Hashem, you know, saved the Jewish people.
Right. That's good. Right. You mean it just took a little bit in that situation, and it took a little bit. It wasn't necessary for them to do full tshuva, just they turned in the right direction, and then God heard them.
Right.
Yeah.
But the Sforno points out it was only a ketzasam. It was only a small amount of people. It was only the, you know.
Oh, ketzasam. Ketzasam. I see, right. Some of them. Yeah, okay, that's, yeah, excellent.
Only some of them.
Yeah, right. It also reminds me of the Rambam, who says that what causes the, in the Nilchus Tainus, the one that Rabbi was reading the other day, he says that When we build a it reminds us that the sin is coming because of our bad, that the punishment is coming because of our bad ways. And that is what causes the punishment to be removed. Which was amazing. And Rebbe pointed this out years ago in some Tashir about this. He says it doesn't say that what causes the punishment to go away is when we do tshuva, when we remove all our bad sins. Rather, it's when we acknowledge the fact that it's because of our bad ways. Which seemingly is like, as long as we move in the right direction, and acknowledge that we're sinful, and acknowledge that we have to work on directing ourselves towards the proper path, then that's what moves us, what causes us to go away. But on the contrary, as the second say, but if we say, nah, it's just carry, it's just type of accent, it's a coincidence, it's natural, then on the contrary, then the Tocha says, then it's going to get worse. And Hashem said, double down seven times worse. And so there is, it seems the formula in the Tocha is Hashem punishes. If we respond, then he removes it. If we don't respond, then we double down in our chait, then he doubles down in the Zalnesh. It becomes very, it could become disastrous very quick. So it seems like the formula which the Torah has is when we have situations like this, Torahs like this, which affect the Tibor as a whole, then the solution, the direction is one of turning inwards, trying to make it a change for the better. Yeah, and again, I do think, at least from, I'm not around the world that much, but from what I see, it does seem that people have this type of sense. It seems that people are thoughtful and are introspective and are trying to, you know, it does seem to have an effect that pulls us out of our day-to-day grind and whatever else we're involved in. And I think people, I don't really know, I haven't taken a survey, but I think to a large extent that, you know, people I'm interacting with seem to be thoughtful and thinking about how we can make ourselves better. And, you know, that seems, again, I don't know what the world at large, maybe different people have different experiences, but it seems to be, you know, from my experience, people are responding in a positive way.
Ellie, just one more question.
Yeah.
Wait, the fact that it applies to, you know, Jews and non-Jews, you know, if the Jews do tshuva and, you know, it's not like it's just going to get, you know, resolve itself for the Jews. Like, how are we in control of the entire population? Unless I'm misunderstanding what you're saying.
Yeah, no, so that's a good question. There's another Gemara, I think it's in Yavama, maybe some of Kimmel or something. I looked at it last week. It says that, and Rav Asher, I quote it, I heard it. It says that Paranas Veg comes to the world because of Tal Yisrael. Which I think means is that, and so the way the Torah is designed is that we are designed to be a light unto the nations of the world. And we are designed to live a moral, ethical, chachmadik, intelligent way of life. And then so far as we do so, we should be a model for the world to follow suit. And so far as the we don't do that, then it's going to undermine the moral level of the world. But in Klal Yisrael functioning properly, we're designed to really teach the world and you know, teach them the ways of Hashem. So insofar as the world is, you know, the world is at a low level in a certain sense, in an indirect way, it's our responsibility. And a punishment, so it could be the world is, that's what I asked Rebbe actually the next day after the shiur, that on the one hand he's saying is like, if Klal Yisrael were at a proper level, then this wouldn't occur. Then there would be a hashgacha that would protect us. Would protect maybe other people in the world, but it would protect us, or the whole thing wouldn't have happened. But at the same time, if we're at a low level, but the rest of the world is at a high level, then in theory, God has other ways to punish Klal Yisrael. I mean, throughout the ages, there have been many punishments which have targeted the Jews and not Goyim, right? Like anti-Semitic, or who knows, all different types of things, right? So arguably, this is an onesh, which is, it affects Klal Yisrael certainly, but it also affects the world at large. And that would seem to indicate that there are sins on our behalf and there are sins on the world's behalf as well. So we don't just, the same question as the Yael had. I mean, to whatever degree of control we have, if we could influence, you know, non-Jews to be able to cause them to move in a good direction, then great. But to whatever, again, we can only do what we can do. So, but if we react properly, then in theory, it would hopefully motivate other people in the world to react properly as well. If any of you have interactions with non-Jews, you could maybe set a model for them and explain to them this is what we're doing. Our model is when situations like this happen, we turn inwards and we try to become better people and we try to grow up. And insofar as we can influence the world, that's great. But what does it take? Could we influence the people of Italy, or I don't know, if we don't have any interactions with them, then maybe we're not going to be able to. And that's, again, up to God, so to speak, whether or not, you know, what it takes to remove it from the world at large. And it's not just, I think the Rebbe's point was, we can't just think of this as a world problem and not a Jewish problem, because it's certainly affecting the Jewish people just as much as it's affecting everybody else. And if we weren't deserving of it, if we were at the highest level where we're supposed to be, then we would be protected from such a thing happening. So it's indicative of the fact that we as a nation are not at the proper level. Now, again, the world is also arguably not at the proper level. And these types of events do change people. They can change the world for the better, even if they don't, you know, even if they're not necessarily thinking of it in a religious framework. Arguably, things like this help, you know, humble people, help give people a different type of a perspective on life, different sense of, you know, the power of humanity. I think there is a humbling feature of this, which automatically affects everybody. It makes us realize that man isn't as strong as we seem to think when these acts of God happen. And I think that's, you know, people, you know, do that. But, yeah. Okay, someone else? Good question, Judy.
Thank you.
Rabbi Peter. I have a bit of an assumption, but then based off of that, a question. I understand that the Mageva, the Esara, should be provoking us towards Teshuvah, but this would seemingly be a little bit different style of Teshuvah than what we normally do, because normally we live our lives as individuals, but since this is such a communal event, it just seems like there's really more of a communal reflection, meaning what are we as a society or we as the Jews doing wrong? And I was sort of wondering if you had any perspective as to what you think we as a people are doing wrong that we should be focusing our efforts on, like, you know, all of us together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good question. That's a good question. Who are we as a world?
Well, I leave my focus to the Jews since, you know, we've got our own plot. It'd be hard enough convincing the Jews, but now worry about the rest right now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, these are hard questions to answer. And, you know, anything anyone says is just, you know, speculation. But, I mean, the one thing that comes to my mind you know, from the beginning is something which I just mentioned earlier. And I make for sure, maybe, I don't know when, but about Magefa, like the another thing when you count the Jews, the thing Magefa, that whole thing. So, you know, there's a whole bigger the conversation here. But the one thing I thought is just naturally is that man, and this is probably very similar to the point, it's an analog to the point Rabbi made the other day. And this is probably obvious. I'm sure most of you have thought of this already. But is that man is very arrogant in a sense. And man feels very powerful. Especially modernity makes us feel like we're in total control of our lives and of the world. And that in a certain sense prevents us from realizing the reality of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We don't feel, and the true state of man is lowly and needy. Okay, we're very low and we're very needy. But because of our success in the modern world, because of our luxurious lives and all the success which we have, we live in great times and prosperity. I think we often feel like, you know, as like the pasuk says, "Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat," and Yeshurun became fat and kicked. And in general, the Ram of Avecha Vechachat, become haughty, we fill up, and we. It's very again, success is very, very often a cause of man to feel arrogant and to feel that he's in need because he's got a mate. Again, if someone is on isn't hit mute, someone could please hit mute. It's some banging in the back there. So the point is that I do think is that state, like as the saying goes, there's no atheist in the foxhole, is that when a person is in dire situation, in a certain sense, he's more in touch with his true philosophical state, which is that he's lowly and he's needy. And that's always true. We right now feel how low, how lack of control we have over the situation. I think mankind, the collective mankind, with all our technology and all of our power, science and everything, realizes that there's very little we can do. We try, you know, but everything, no one really has any good solutions. I mean, there are attempted solutions, and hopefully it will go far, but ultimately we're humbled by acts of God. Even atheists call them acts of God. It's like it's clearly like makes man realize his small stature in the universe. And that's, I think, in contrast to the way we usually think about man. And we build skyscrapers and we have such great technology and at our fingertips. And I think that is a distortion. The fact that we feel so powerful and strong is really an illusion. Because we're really, you know, something like this reveals how as strong as we are, look, something like this could happen. But the only thing like this could happen, I mean, even the strongest person could get hit by a car or could have any disease or any million things could happen to a person. Even the richest person could lose all their money. And any person, and we're all but mortal, and we only live for a short amount of time, and we live in a very big universe, and we're very small in that big universe. So there's a lot of things that which always could remind us of our smallness and of our lack of control and of our true place in the bigger picture of things. But we don't recognize them on a daily basis. And I think our success and our prosperity and our technology, you know, deludes us into thinking that we're more important than we truly are. So maybe like a time like this could move man, could move Jews, could move us as individuals, as a community towards. I think we're in touch with it. It's scary, and that is scary because I think it's breaking down our fantasies that we have a lot of power and a lot of control over the world. And Rebbe's point was the fantasy we have control through tefillah, that a religious person feels he has control because he, so to speak, could pray to God and whatever will happen. But I'm saying another angle of that is even non-religious people or religious people also, we just feel because of our success and our prosperity, we just feel that we don't need God. Who needs God when we have the internet and we have cell phones or whatever? I'm just, you know, for example, we have so much food and we have so much money and we have so much technology. It's like, I think in a certain sense, it's much easier in times like this to think how needy we are and to daven and to turn to Hashem and to realize that we should do tshuva and we should become better people because we realize ultimately there is Harvel Mesh. And what do we have to bank on here other than to turn to, other than our relationship with God? God tells us our success or failure is based upon our level, our moral and our ethical and our Torah and mitzvah level. So I think, again, it does shatter our illusions, and those illusions are what I think prevent us from taking life seriously sometimes and taking our responsibilities in life seriously, because we feel that we're powerful anyway. So maybe this could help us, you know, recognize the fact that, like Rebbe said, that God is the Kanish Mahavarach, and we're just Nivraim, we're just creatures in God's world. And ultimately, we have to do our best to align ourselves with God's will and with trying to bring about Kiddush Hashem and try to bring about a world which should really pursue knowledge of God as best as possible. But again, we get lost, like the way Rabbi Zimmer said, it's a wake-up call for us. I think we do fall asleep in our all the nonsense that we're involved in. So this could help us, you know, break it. The insecurity is a true insecurity, and it helps us, you know, could help us try to make strides.
Rabbi Feder.
Yeah.
It's funny you express it that way. Kochav Yatzam Yadi, you know, like by Bikurim,
yeah.
That we recognize that these things are not in our hands. Or by Sukkos, we go out of our comfort zone into a hut.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
not our protection.
Yeah.
We have these ideas all through Yadis, but
yeah.
it takes a Magefa to, take it out of, maybe that's what a Magefa does. It takes the ideas that we already know that are familiar, but that's then
yeah.
puts it in extreme focus. We know Kochav Yatzam Yadi from Bikurim. We know leaving our security of the home from Sukkos. We know all these ideas, but maybe they get lost. Maybe they get lost in familiarity, and
yeah.
we need a wake up call.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, another thing which is a related point is that I think our social network also gives us a sense of security. Our interactions, our society, our community, we feel stronger than just me alone because I'm part of a something, of a community, of a friend, that network of friends. And we do take security in each other, in the collective humanity or collective Farakway or collective YBT community or collective Jewish nation. And in a certain sense, when we're forced into our homes, we're more lonely and we're more face to face with our smallness. The collective, people identify with the group because it makes you feel, you know, more important and more significant than you really are. And while we still could do that through the internet, I think just the separation from people is psychologically painful. And the fact that it's painful is because it really puts us face to face with our smallness and our limitations, which is painful. But, you know, these types of pains are opportunities for growth. And I think that's the way we can take these certain things psychologically painful because it rubs against our fantasies, and these could be painful, but we could take them as opportunities to try to utilize them to grow. Yeah, it's hard to grow when you're busy doing your whole life. And these are situations where, you know, we're put up against the wall, and sometimes it allows us to be a little more thoughtful about where we're at and about different things in life. Yeah. Okay, good point, Leslie. Thank you. Okay, anyone else?
Yeah, I have a question. I was wondering, you were saying that something that could, not for sure, but could possibly be a cause for this is the fact that we're sort of very satisfied in our modern lives and we think we're in control of everything. Would you say that this message, like, does it also have application in places where they don't, you know, they maybe don't have the same advanced technology as the U.S. or as, you know, lives as we do, like having easy access to food and all that. Because it's like a pandemic and like the disease is like going everywhere. Like, is there like a certain like way that this like affects everyone's mentality, or do you think there's like something like that?
I don't know. I mean, like, look, I guess you mean like third world countries or something like that, which really never really have success in monetary prosperity or anything like that?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Good question. You mean I don't know. That's a hard question. Like this, the overwhelming, I don't know the numbers, but the majority of the world, they'd say, it does partake of this modernity in that sense, and in the sense that it helps them in this regard. But, you know, God, obviously, God's teshbonos are take everything into account. And, you know, what's the sin of the people in Africa who are third world, and in what way is this designed to help them? And I don't know. It's hard to, I don't know. Good question, but I don't know how to answer that type of question. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Someone else?
Yeah, hi. I have a question.
Hi. I got Sam.
Yeah. A question about doing tshuva. It's clear from all the halakhos that situation like this we're hired to do tshuva. And, you know, let's say you block off, like, okay, I'm going to block off this hour. I'm going to think about tshuva. It's hard to actually do it because it's so big. Yeah. If something happens, if you like make a mistake, let's say you make a mistake in a relationship or something, and it's clear that you made a mistake, I'm not going to say it's easy, but at least you know what you need to do tshuva on. You know, I wasn't being sensitive enough or something like that. Right. With something like this, you know, what do you actually practically do if you have some free time to do tshuva? Right. I mean, mefashvish b'masav is, you know, it's very extremely general and big.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's a similar question to every Yom Kippur, right? Sorry, Sunei Tshuva, that type of thing, right?
Yeah.
That's true. So, you know, there's different types of answers to that question. I mean, one of them is basically the same answer as Yom Kippur, which is the Tshuva answer, which is, you know, to become a tzaddik overnight is not realistic. And the person has a lot of different defects and a lot of different areas which one needs to work on. And to just say, I'm going to do Tshuva in this global sense, it's like a nice theory, but it doesn't really work. It's not realistic. It's not a real change. So, I mean, that's what I typically like to do, or like to advise people to do, is to try to pick one. At least, again, I'm talking typically Yom Kippur, and it applies nowadays also, but maybe there's something else for here. But just this is just a general point. Just pick something. Pick one thing. Pick two things. Pick something which you feel is an area which you have a weakness in. And try to work on it. Try to uncover your motivations. Try to uncover what, you know, where it's leading you, why it's not a good path, how you could work on strategies of trying to overcome it and direct your energies elsewhere, or things, you know, things of that sort. But pick something which is reasonable. You know, again, the person could, you know, sometimes a person picks something which is a way, you know, deeply rooted, almost impossible to get access to. And, you know, you pick something which is too hard, you know, then you're not going to get anywhere. So I'd say pick a small one or two things which you think are, you know, reasonable to try to make a change in. Try to think of a strategy of how to go about minimizing your involvement in it, or directing your energies elsewhere, or avoiding pitfalls which caused you to do a given sin or to have a bad, you know, character trait. And try to work on, you know, a small bite-sized piece. I think tshuva works more like in piecemeal, in small steps, and that, you know, you can't change everything about yourself overnight. That's not, you know, and if you try, you're not going to get anywhere. So that's, I think, one thing, which you know, is, again, I know that that's not a full answer, but that's a step. You with me?
Yeah.
But another point. Again, this is I guess more particular to this time. Is given that, like, again, Yom Kippur, just like as Arizona was saying, Kippur is in a certain sense like a manufactured Eitzah. It's like supposedly Yom HaDin. But like here, there's a reality of different emotions which come to the fore, as you were talking about, different psychological conflicts and different fears and different, you know, things are brought up because of the actual situation that we're in. And it might bring to our forefront different complexes or different weaknesses which we have. And sometimes when you frustrate certain emotions, it allows you to see them more clearly and to direct your energy elsewhere. So like, I don't know, for example, let's say a person is too dependent upon other people, you know, and that's like their mida, that they can't work for themselves and they're always leaning on other people to be able to function and they're not able to be independent and, you know, something like that, you know. So maybe at this time, it's maybe very frustrating for them, but then they could use this time to develop their ability to think for themselves or to act for themselves or to be by themselves, you know. So like the situation that we're in, I think, does push buttons of ours, you know, and it might allow us to open up areas of teshuvah that wouldn't necessarily be available to us at all times. Like a person might, for instance, usually have a very busy work schedule and prevent them from being able to learn. So maybe now they don't have a commute and maybe their hours at work are shorter. So maybe it's an opportunity to push oneself and be more focused in that area, and maybe you can make learning a bigger part of one's life, and then that will have carryover to when we go back to the regular society, you know. So like there are, I do think that, you know, it's a time which shakes us up, and it could shake us up and cause us to chew on any random thing, but it might be easier to work on something which is related to the current matzav, you know, the current situation, which somehow, I don't know, you know, brings up, again, where there are a lot of emotions and a lot of thoughts and a lot of, you know, situations that we're put in. Or, for example, as I mentioned, maybe a person doesn't get along that well with their family, or they fight with their spouse or their sibling or their child or their whatever it is. And they, you know, this situation is a good opportunity to work on that, because, you know, maybe if you don't get along with a particular person you live with in general, so, okay, you don't see them that much and whatever. Now it could ruin your life. I mean, if you're forced to be together in time like this, and you have to make sure. So now it could force you to work on those emotions. Being considerate of other people in your house and other people's feelings and other, you know. So like, I just think it might be that, again, the sit back and let's think of changing myself is too vague and amorphous. So I think there are a lot of different, you know, things which are brought to mind in this situation, that it might be more advantageous to utilize something which is pertinent to the situation in which we find ourselves. We might have more success, you know, in that type of an area. You know, the situation might direct us towards particular areas. How does that sound?
Good. Good. Good answer.
Okay. Someone else?
I have a question about the part of Shiva that is Kabbalah al Ha'asid. Like Kabbalah al Ha'asid, like to take upon yourself something for the future, so that when we go back to a regular life, we'll carry this with us. So what is the proper way to approach that in terms of taking on something that carries through?
Right. That's a good question. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you take tshuva, which you do at this time, how do you strategize in order to make it long-lasting? And maybe at this time, someone might be able to do something. Yeah, in this world which we're in, maybe a person could make a stride in a certain area, but then what's going to happen when you go back to work and we go back to our ordinary life? And how do we, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good question. Or the same question comes up every year, you know, in Yom Kippur, when we do tshuva for things, which we think we do tshuva for things, and then a day or later, two or three or four later, we're back to doing the same things, right? This is for now, but this is in general. Tshuva is very easy to do, lip service tshuva, or superficial tshuva, or guilty conscience tshuva. You know, we feel very emotional. And as such, we are in a state of guilt or of emotion or whatever the emotion is, We just decide that we're going to change, but it's not true change. So I think one thing is we have to be deep about our tshuva and thoughtful and insightful. And if we just kind of just say, oh, I do this and this wrong, then I'm just going to stop. Well, you know, I talk about Lashon Hara and I'm just going to stop talking about Lashon Hara. Well, how are you going to do that exactly? You feel guilty about it and you say you're going to, but you're not really making any insight into your personality. You're not going to get anywhere. So that's one reason why tshuva is short-lasting, I think, is because it's not deep. You don't think into, well, what am I getting by talking about Lashon Hara? What am I trying to accomplish? What type of social satisfaction am I getting from Lashon Hara? Why is it bad? What's wrong about it? Why is it not worth it for me in the long run to be pursuing Lashon Hara? You know, that type of an analysis of one's personality and the gains to which they're trying to get and the faults, why those are really illusory. Sometimes the things you think you're going to get ultimately aren't really worth it. So, like, I think tshuva, to really be, you know, valuable, I think has to be thoughtful and insightful. You know, a person says, I want to learn Torah more. Well, what's so good about it? Why do you want to learn Torah more? Why don't you normally learn Torah more? And why you convince yourself that really you should be? Because if you can't convince yourself that you should be and you just feel guilty, well, then the guilt's going to follow up. And the situation of this tragedy is going to, this guilty which we're in now is going to fall away. If we're going to come out of this, then these emotions which we have now are not going to be here forever. So if our whole tshuva is just in response to these emotions, and just, you know, then it's not really it's not going to last. But if the emotions cause us to be insightful, and it could cause us to do tshuva, but then the tshuva itself has to be more than just, you know, responding to the emotions. It has to be thoughtful and, you know, insightful into what ultimately makes, you know, into our personality. I think also another aspect of tshuva is, in most sins or midos have triggers, okay, which are situations which get us to do the sin. So, like, for example, as an example, is the Torah, the Isser Yichud in the Torah. Like, the Rambam calls Yichud is a Gorei Magadol. I think that's the Lashon. It's like a great cause of Arayot. Which means is that the way for the person avoids Arayot, and this is just one example, but it's true for all of Arayot, the way a person avoids Arayot is by not having Yichud. The person, it's not realistic for a person to say, look, I'm going to have yichud with a certain woman, but then I can control myself. That's not normal. That's not expected. The Torah says, avoid yichud, because yichud is a goreim of chet. And I think that, in general, in any sin that we have, it's not ordinary that the sin just happens upon us in an instant. But there are triggers for the sin. And if a person truly has something which they want to avoid, then there are steps that we should take to avoiding it, right? Like, if a person has a problem eating ice cream, well, then don't buy any ice cream and don't keep ice cream in your house. Why do you have ice cream in your house if you don't want to eat any ice cream, for example? So, you know, that's a mundane example. But in different situations, there are different triggers that we have which would move us towards the chayt. So if you really see a chayt as bad for you, you're just going to decide you're not going to do it, but you're not going to do anything to avoid the triggers which move us in that direction. And I think it's not realistic to just trust yourself that you can have the willpower once the trigger comes in. Because the triggers do is they kick off, or they arouse our emotions towards whatever sin it is. They get us, they pull us in. And then it's very hard to extricate oneself from the force of the emotion when it's in full power. But before the trigger comes in, avoiding the trigger, you don't have a strong emotion yet. Before a person that has yichud, before a person in a situation of yichud, their instincts aren't so strong. And then they're able to control themselves. Once they're in that yichud, in that room, well, then the emotions are very, very powerful. And, you know, Yosef HaTzadik could pull himself out of that. But that's what the great stories of the Torah come from, Yosef HaTzadik, the son Yosef HaTzadik. For us, we better not get into yichud, because once we are, we're never going to, you know, in general, we're not going to be able to withstand it. So I think whatever, you know, that's one example, but I think in many situations, let's say in Lashon Hara, I mean, it might be when you interact with a certain person, you end up, that's just what ends up happening. You're so much now with that person. That's just for whatever reason. So maybe don't interact with that person. Or maybe, you know, change the nature of your interaction with that person. Or I don't know, whatever it is. But be thoughtful, I think, about strategies of avoiding a chayt. Not so much of not doing chayt, but of strategies of avoiding chayt. Or it's a positive also. And this one, learn Torah. Well, why are you not learning Torah? Oh, because you know, you're just lazy and whatever, and you're not in the mood or whatever. Well, maybe make a Tuma Torah. Set a time. And if you have a time that you stick to it and commit yourself to it, like commit yourself to a meeting, put it on your schedule and don't give it up unless it's an emergency. Well, then you're more likely setting up strategies where you take it seriously, like something you truly want to commit yourself to. Which is, like, again, oftentimes if we're superficial about our plans, we just say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. But we have to realize that we are affected by situations which we find ourselves in. And I think a big step is to, you know, avoid those triggers or, you know, put ourselves in a proper situation where our emotions will be in line with, you know, doing what we want to do. We just decide it's good for ourselves. And going forward. Profit, you know, going forward, if you make some change now, well, think about in this time, think about how are you going to carry it forward? Why is it so hard? What's going to happen after you go out of quarantine? What's going to happen and what's going to pull you away from it? And what are you going to do to stop that from happening? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, someone wants to say something?
Ray Fader? Maybe one of the opportunities of, you know, being in confinement and having the extra time and having our schedules completely shifted enables us to see, like, the problems, you know, of our prior choices, of our other weaknesses that maybe we could sort of overlook. You know, certain weaknesses when we're distracted all day long with work or other life things versus sitting around and dealing with other scenarios. You don't necessarily see why the hate is bad. It's not as real, right? You don't suffer the consequence, and it's not, you don't have the same insight about hate, which, you know, here's the opportunity. Right. This creates the opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. Could you give some example of that? I like what you're saying. So I don't know if you have something particular in mind. If you do, that would be helpful. But I hear your points in general.
Well, let's say a person has, you know, doesn't have have Torah as part of their regular schedule, but they're so distracted that they're satisfied anyway. You know, or a person is too busy to do their social responsibilities or their familial responsibilities, or, you know, maybe whatever their kids may need. But now you're home, and now you see, and all of a sudden you see the difference, and you see the benefit, even if it's challenging. But, you know, you could delude yourself about the benefit or the significance. So those are, you know, weakest examples. I'm sure there's stronger ones, but.
Yeah. No, that's good. You're right. Right. I mean, we don't, again, that's kind of like the Amos point, is that we fall asleep. The chauffeur, the wake-up call, we fall asleep with our waste of our time. I forgot his question exactly. Hevlei hazman. Like, we involve ourselves in so many things of nonsense, whether they be work or whether they be, you know, the internet or computers or whatever else it is that we're involved in. And these things are such a, you know, strain of our time and energy. And sometimes we don't realize what's truly important in life. And this type of situation could take us out of our normal patterns of behavior and cause us to feel more, see the consequences of our bad midos, achatayim, or whatever it is. It's because we're moved from the hustle and bustle, which distracts us from these things. And that's good. It could underline and highlight problems which we have, and thereby cause us to see what we should work on. Sure. And your flaws might come out more in a way, because we, you know, in a certain sense, maybe we pattern our lives in ways which do cover over our flaws. You know? That's probably something that people do naturally. But, you know, now we're out of our element, and we're out of all our, you know, our illusions are gone, and we're not in the situation which we need to be in to cover over our flaws, and sometimes we come face to face with them. Yeah, you know, I heard this, someone quoted, I listened to, I think, Dr. Pelkowitz. I think he said that some study, I don't know if he said, he didn't know if it's accurate or not, but some study that in China, after the quarantine ended, like, the number of divorces were China, like, crazy. You know, like, people just, like, you know, they just, I don't know if it's a good study or not, but, you know, it could just be, like, if you average it out, it could be people who couldn't get divorced, it could be just a smooth out the curve, and it's not really a thing. But, like, it could just be, like, people were in situations that you know, maybe people's relationships with their spouses who are, you know, they dealt with them given that they were at work and this and that and the other thing. But like, it forces us that point. That's what Zimmer's point is. It forces us to work on shalom. You know, it forces us to build our relationships, our marriages, our relationships with our kids, our siblings. You know, these types of situations are, you know, that's what I thought. Dr. Pegler's point is, you know, he doesn't think that's going to be the case in Jewish society, but, you know, hopefully it isn't. But it's an opportunity to, because we're with our families so much, it's a good opportunity to work on those areas. You know, that's a good, if we neglect our family, then this is a good time where we may realize that that's the case and may cause us to, you know, to work on that. Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting is this situation is so different. It's such a change for us that, you know, it got to bring up different parts of our, different challenges and different weaknesses and different, you know, like, you know, I seem to remember Moskowitz says, someone maybe could quote him better, but, you know, when he has frustration, he's happy about it. Because frustration means like his emotions in some area aren't in line with reality. And it allows him to get an insight into his own personality. When he's frustrated, he realizes something that helps him get a window into his personality, into his weaknesses. And, you know, if a person were truly perfected, they'd just be able to roll with the punches and deal with situations which come their way. And just accept it. But it's like, because we have these illusions and fantasies about the way the world should be, and it becomes very frustrating when it doesn't all work out that way. And it's kind of, you could see your weaknesses when you have frustration. So again, there are a lot of frustrations in this point in this time, a lot of fears, a lot of anxieties come up, and it could be a window to our personality in a way that we wouldn't ordinarily have. You know, again, obviously this is a very hard time for us all, but at the same time, it doesn't, you know, we should maybe direct our anxieties away from anxiety and towards more positive, productive types of growth and thinking, and hopefully we can end up on the other side and as much better people. You know, and arguably that's what will help us get out of it anyway. There's a true one, you know. Yeah. Okay, good. Any another question? Thank you, Donnie.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Esty.
So you were talking about for certain types of tshuva that you could try to avoid triggers. Would that be just for like chatam that are like actions, or also would it have to do with nidos? I was trying to think of maybe, do you have like an example of where it would have to do with nidos, or do you think it's not really applicable to that?
You don't? Yeah, I think so. I mean, let's say a mida of you know, arrogance. I don't know, something like that. So gaiva. So I don't know, maybe a person is, when a person has a certain type of, tells jokes. Let's say a certain person is like the life of the party, and they feel arrogant, and they feel like they're, you know, they're important, because they, and what caters to that sense is that everyone looks at them, and they're always talking, and everyone's looking at them, and laughing at them, and all that. So it makes them feel like a great sense of ego. So maybe that's a trigger. Maybe they shouldn't be the life of the party. Maybe it's helpful for them to be able to pull out of situations which cater to that type of sentiment. You know, maybe there's certain friends they had to hang out with who play into their ego. You know, and those types of situations will, you know, help bring them down and allow them to continue this false sense of self. So avoiding those types of situations which cater to the ego. You know, so again, any emotion is, you know, any mida is going to be triggered by different situations. You know, money, a person may have a love of money. So maybe they're working nonstop and, you know, work, taking every single deal which comes their way, every opportunity to make more and more and more money. So they're mida that they're too attached to money. Maybe they could avoid, you know, situations which kind of put them in the face of money and the situations of money, involved in conversations with people who are always talking about money. You know, there are things which trigger us and pull on our money emotions. You know, or Adam, I'm sure you can have other examples, but does that work?
Yeah, it makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, but again, for every emotion, you know, you think about particulars. Yeah, go ahead.
It's a little bit off of the tshuva, but it's really just a question of, have you put any thought into the communal, the blindness of the community, or the denial for the weeks leading up to the Machla, you know, as either as a country or as even the Jewish, our community, the Jewish community, you know, like how you can account for that, or how, you know, there's no chacham to just speak up and just say, you know, you guys are basically, you know, bringing death. I mean, the writing was on the wall. I don't think there was much, you know, the facts were out there. And yet so many people, you know, to various degrees and times, you know, until they were able to internalize it or see it. But there was something very weird. There was like a collective, there's this like, it's hard to understand how that could be.
Right. I mean, you know, I think it's like, to some extent, I think is that we're very much moved by what we see. And as far as everyone could see, everything was normal and safe, and everyone was great. And, you know, maybe China was having issues, but everyone in America seemed to be pretty good. And, you know, like the argument that this was serious and something had to be done was something which was totally based upon like a svara, if you will, you know, and it's totally based on thinking. There was no concrete evidence that we had to do something now. You know, it was more like you had to totally be based on thinking. And what it would demand that we would do would be very, very, very difficult, which, as you see, even now it's very difficult. And now we know we have to do it. But it's very painful, very difficult. So to ask the world, again, it's not the kind of thing any individual could have done, I think, also. That's the part of the problem also. No individual could say, well, I'm going to go to quarantine. So the problem, it's making this a problem on the level which it is because the community, it's been spreading and spreading and spreading. So one person couldn't quarantine, it wouldn't stop it. You need the world to decide this, or the city, or to close all the schools. But like, now you're fighting, you have to tell 8 million or whatever, how many million people there are in New York to stay in the houses. As it is, even today, it's hard to tell people that, and it's hard to convince people to do that. So now you're going to say, to do that, it's like based upon a svara, which is against, but all ostensibly nothing's wrong. And it's very asking people to do something very, very painful. And look, maybe it's not going to be as bad as everyone thinks it is. It's not 100% clear that it was down. The writing was on the wall, but it wasn't, you know, solid ink. It wasn't, you know, permanent ink. It wasn't 100% clear that it was going to be that way. And, you know, maybe some people are more confident than others, but that's all a matter of arguments and svara. The different people are different opinions.
It was actually, the evidence was, it was selectively available for those to sort it out. But you would think the politicians or the chachamim or the rabbanon or, you know, some conscientious objector that has power or, you know, intelligence.
Yes. But, you know, there were experts who said that it wasn't, you know, so now maybe some individuals could sort through all the different experts and decide that they see clearly that, you know, despite the fact that there's some experts on both sides, maybe that was available, but that's a person to have the confidence that that is definitely right. And they're going to thereby give them the confidence to pull the plug on society, you know, based upon your confidence and your svara, despite the fact that there are a lot of experts who are saying to the contrary. So, you know, who's doing that? So individuals said that, but there are individuals on the other side. And, you know, it did work out in line with those people, but I don't know that it was, you know, like a proof, like a mathematical proof that this was clearly where it was headed. You know, maybe to your mind it was, but there were a lot of people's minds it wasn't as clear. So, you know, to force everybody to act in that way based upon a intuitive, maybe solid intuitive argument, but intuitive argument is very hard to do. And I guess you may be great leaders to do that, but we didn't have them, you know?
So, correct. No, I think it was. I think you're great. Impossible.
You really need really great. I think you really need great leaders like that. You're taking on the crowd, the masses. You're asking people to do something which is very, very, very difficult. And you have to have be 100% convinced, and you have to exhibit great qualities of leadership and push against people's emotions. And, you know, I think that's like I'm not saying no one could do it, but, you know, it's very difficult for a person to do. So, no, apparently we didn't have any leaders like that.
And I think also we had a lot of misleading information that if we had the correct information, it would be different.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's hard. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, and a lot of different people said a lot of different things. So, you know, yeah, for sure.
Do you think it's appropriate, like, people are tying into Mashiach and looking for signs or dreams?
People are what, tying into Mashiach?
Yeah, so like they're looking at signs and stuff like that, like the name of the thing, which is relating to different things that they're finding.
No, it's hard for me to hear you, but I don't think we really know when Mashiach is coming. We're all very against computing when Mashiach is going to come. I mean, maybe this is the beginning of Mashiach coming, but you know how many times in history that's been said? You know, we've been through a lot of stuff with tough times throughout our history, and you've always said, and they did always say, this is Mashiach, 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 and, you know, so far none of them panned out. So, I mean, the Mirtz Hashem, it will be. And, of course, we should be mechakelo for all the time to try to work towards that direction. But if anything, it seems like, you know, we're not in a very good state here. So I don't really see evidence that we're on the heels of Mashiach coming, you know. If anything, we have evidence that we have Sojmi Midas Adin from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Mashiach doesn't, you know, it seems to be we're really need Rachamim, or certainly it doesn't seem that there's evidence that we're in good stead before Kodesh Baruch Hu, such that Mashiach is ready to come. I don't see any indication of that. If anything, it's the indication of that we're far from it. So, I don't know. You know, people like to grab hold. Whenever there's tragedy, people like to grab hold of these types of, you know, hopes. But I don't see any evidence or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. But, you know, it's true that it is like a punishment for Hashem. I mean, it's also like kind of a very, almost a kind punishment because it's mild. No, I mean, like, if we could use our intelligence, we could avoid it. If we make any type of
challenge,
we have a lot of leeway here. And it's also pushing us to, it's mild and it's pushing us to do tshuva. So,
Mirtz Hashem will stay as mild as it is now. You know? Yeah, now it's mild, but, you know, who knows? We'll see. Again, it's mild for us who are sitting here and are healthy. There are people who aren't. And it's not clear. These things grow exponentially. It's not clear how mild it's going to end up. I mean, hopefully it will stay this mild. But, I mean, now we're in a state where we have, you know, hopefully this is the worst it's going to get, but I don't think anyone really thinks that. So, you know, we're in a state where we could, maybe hopefully we could work on do Maisim Tovim and do Tshuva now, and we can stop it immediately in the track. But, you know, right now we're in a state which, I do think we're in a state now where we're scared and we're quarantined, but ultimately not bad. Again, of course, I don't mean to be insensitive. I'm sure there are people who it is bad for. But overall for society, it's uncomfortable, but not terrible. You know, and, you know, this is a time where we could be work on ourselves and hopefully we could stop it before it gets worse. But it might become worse. Who knows, you know? Certainly possible.
You know, there are effects, like, in terms of business. I mean, there are businesses that are going under, and people are losing all their finances and money. So there are other types of effects besides for just, you know, the health.
Yes, definitely. Yes. But even that, you know, that's also currently mild. I think that's going to get worse and worse and worse the longer this goes on. So, you know, I think maybe some businesses are whatever, but I think at this point, I don't really know, but I think at this point, if it stops tomorrow, I think most businesses and most people will be okay. But who knows how long it's going to go on for, you know? And it could get very bad for people financially, physically, psychologically. You know, but it's a lot of levels which this could get bad. So, you know, Mitzvah Hashem will stay, you know, will continue good, and we have to just follow for that and try to work on ourselves. But currently, yes, in some sense, it's mild for most people.
Is that the derech of the tochacha also, right? It starts off mild, and then depending on how we react, it goes, you know, proceeding level.
Definitely, right. If we just say, look, no big deal, this is what happens, then that's carry, then it gets worse. So we should think, yes, it might be mild, but it's mei Hashem. This is clearly not the ordinary way of the world. Something different is going on here, and we have to respond in terms of recognizing Yad Hashem and do tshuva and Maizim Tovim. And hopefully that will be the go-ram for us to keep it mild. But, you know, but it's enough, as mild as it is, it's enough to shake us. and to throw us out of our comfort zone and to cause us to move in a proper direction. And, you know, there is threats of bad things to come, and that should be a trigger for us to all try as best as we could to work on ourselves and grow. You know, I don't think we should take too much comfort in the mildness. On the contrary, we should face the potential, you know, bad times to help us be motivated towards growing now. We don't want to wait till it gets worse to go. We want to grow now. And now we're in a position where we could, because, you know, most of us are in a relatively okay place.
Yeah, actually, it seems that the same issue of not being able to see what's coming is happening again, though. Right, the impatience that's quickly breeding because of the painful financial effect, because of the devastating impact that has on people's ability to pay for their homes and support, buy food and know how they're going to come up with it. It's creating a sense that that becomes a priority, which plays very much into the chait or potential chait of being too, you know, not relating to money in a healthy way and prioritizing it over other things. But it looks very well that the political will and the people in terms of sway may lead to, could very easily lead to that kind of choice where they prioritize the money and then just let it get worse, yeah. Make it get worse.
Yeah. I know. You know, the thing is like certain decisions are like societal decisions that we have very little control and power over, which is unfortunate. You know, we're not being led by, Shlomo HaMelech, and no country is. And there is, in a certain sense, there's very little that we could do about that. You know, so we are in a certain sense, unfortunately, beholden to the decisions of our leaders. I mean, to whatever degree we could influence, but what degree could we influence? And these decisions are communal decisions. No decision that any one person makes. Any one person wants to stay in quarantine forever, it's not going to change the course of this whole disease. It's all in Alhaka. So that's unfortunate. But, you know, we could ponder about the mistakes that they're making, but at the same time, there's very little we could do. And I think that's another point. I think there is a lot of energy we could put into following the news cycle, you know? And a person's at home, all their time and energy at home, it's very easy to basically spend all day long looking at the news and looking at, as Aaron has a share of junk food for the soul. You know, it's just, I recommend that if anyone hasn't heard that share. But it's, it's very easy to just be so distracted by the news cycle that you don't have any time to think about yourself and to do tshuva and to learn Torah and to be working with your family and working on whatever else. There's so much going on in the news. There's no shortage of news stories about every twist and turn of how this is playing out. But to some extent, you want to know what's going on, and it affects your decision making to a certain extent. You should know how serious it is, and use that as a tool to help you stay in quarantine and to give you the strength to do so. But a person is very easy to, because of the anxiety, a person can feed anxiety and just nonstop be involved in checking their phones and be involved in trying and following the news. But you know, there's no need for that. Might be a need to make decisions, in which case the person has to look into things to a certain extent. But, you know, certainly we get too attached to it. And that itself could be part of our chait. We're so attached to one chait. Certainly we're so attached to our devices and our social networks and all that. I mean, a person is busy. If the person follows every WhatsApp conversation that they're on and every email that they get and every text that they get and every news story that pops up, you have no time to work on yourself. So, you know, maybe a person might want, an innocent person, there is a certain amount of us, we do concern about these things, but maybe a person could relegate it to certain times of day. Every person has to have their own thing, but maybe a certain time which they're engaged in that, certain frequency which they're engaged in it. Maybe a person could strategize, not just to be able to at any second of the day to be engaged in, to become distracted by these things. It becomes non-productive, and you know, we oftentimes feel like we could gain control over a situation just by thinking about it a lot, but it doesn't really work. We have to, in a certain sense, have bitachon b'Hashem and, you know, to do what we could do regarding the, you know, the situation, but at the same time, don't put too much time and energy into things that we can't do. We can't have nothing, you know, we can't control.
that we could control our own lives and our own decisions to some extent. But these other things which are out of our hands, again, I think we have an inexorbitant amount of energy and time which we put into things which are out of our control and doesn't really affect us, but it doesn't, we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
Is this singing on purpose?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to ask a lot. At least me, I assume many others are focused on Rifayenu in Shmona Esrei. Perhaps some of the ideas of Rifayenu. Is there any precedence for adding a specific tefillah for specific types of calamities or epidemics, either within Rifayenu or outside of it? Is that
definitely? Definitely. I mean, as I'll say, a person in each bracha, a person can put in a tefillah. I mean, there is, for instance, even in the Seder, in the Archkol Seder, for example, there's a Hiratzon, Shetishach Refor Shleim and Hashemayim Posagafu. You look in the Seder, it has it. And there's one in a few brachas they have it. But in the Gemara says that at the end of each bracha, before the end of each bracha, like before Ki Kel Ma'af Rofein Neman Rachman Asa, before in every bracha in Shmon Esrei, there's a phrase right before that. It's called Mein Chatima Samach Chatima. So like Chanein Mitzvah Devin Raska, right before that, or there's like a little phrase right before the bracha. So in each of the brachos, the person could add in a request regarding that bracha in that bracha. So in Hebrew or in English, if a person needs, so you could add in a request about whatever it is. So Berech Aleinu, a person could add in a request about the financial situation, that Hashem will protect us from the difficulties and the food shortages and whatever, and then a Rifayenu person could ask for Hashem to heal those of the coronavirus and I don't know, in different places. Another place is Shmak Aleinu, person could make any request in Shmak Aleinu. Before Kiyat Hashemet feels Kol Peah or Amchay Shabrahman, right before that phrase. Person could add in any request. Or at the end of before the last Yilu Ratzon, and there a person also could add in a request. But definitely, a person in tefillah should formulate, a good idea, I think, to formulate requests based upon the way they see the world at this time, and they see their life at this time, and turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in tefillah. And today it's Eis Tzara, and there's a mitzvah of crying out in Eis Tzara. I'm presuming the tefillah could be not just the generic tefillah that we always say, which is they worked out great chachma for Hashem, like Bayashas and Dola, for the universal needs, but now there are particular needs which we have, and I think a person should put thought into taking tefillah seriously, and part of taking tefillah seriously is to be thoughtful about how to organize, to judge our, like people, to judge our needs and to formulate them before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and make requests. Definitely.
Is there a sense to a specific formulation that everyone adheres to? Like, I've seen the OU and the OK and everyone. Does it help that everyone says the same thing?
I don't know. There is an advantage to it, is that it's eloquent and it's written with Chachma. So that's a good idea. But I don't think it's because everyone's saying the same thing. I think it's just that it should be a good tefillah. But every person has, there are universals and then there are particular things. And I think it's a good idea for you to be thoughtful about your own tefillah and to assess. Not everyone has the exact same tzrachim. So, there are universal tzrachim for the world, and maybe you could use the fixed text, which some group of chachamim or rabbanim have written. That's great. But there's also an idea of assessing your situation and your needs and making a request to HaKadosh Baruch Hu based upon the situation as you see it. And tefillah should be not rote. I think there's a value to tefillah not being just a rote activity, but something which is real and meaningful to you, which you think about. And you're standing before the King of Kings who has the power to answer your request. Then you should take it seriously and formulate a request as you see it. If you decide that you wrote something which talks to you and is great, then great, look around. But don't just say it. I think you should know what it means and think about it and take it on, because you see that it's see what it means and it's meaningful, and you should connect to what you're saying.
Is it appropriate to say every tefillah, something like that, or?
I think so. I think so. Yeah, I don't see why. I mean, as long as the Torah goes on, I don't think it's on your mind. I mean, this is what's on your mind. This is what we're thinking about. This is what we're thinking about, and this is what we're worrying about. And why wouldn't we, turn to God and ask Him for it?
Is there any need for originality?
What?
Is there any need for originality?
You mean in each and every tefillah, or your own originality as opposed to using those formula?
Each and every tefillah.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it depends. If your needs change, and if the moments change, and if you have particular things which are worrying you, then you could change in different tefillahs. But if you, if things stay roughly the same, if I don't think your needs are necessarily changing from Shachar to Mincha to Arev, unless the situation changes, if someone in your house gets sick, then maybe your tefillah is going to change to include that. The situation on whatever of hospital beds seems to be a real issue then in your town or whatever it is, and maybe your tefillah should be turned to that. If you have food issues, there's different situations. So, I mean, as the facts on the ground change, I would think your tefillah should change. So far as the facts stay the same, I don't think there's a reason to change it up. Figure out what's a good thing to say and stick with it until you have a different sorrow. Another thing a person could daven for is, there's another point to get to Dan's question, is first, I think a person, I mean, we see it's one of the second bracha in Shemoneh Esrei is Hashivenu Vino Tzoras Racha. So a person should daven to Hashem to either have kavana of that or a person to add something to help you do tshuva in this time. This is a unique opportunity. Ask Hashem to help you, to help to give you the insight, to help put you in situations which will help you be able to grow. Use this opportunity to grow for tshuva. You see that we ask for a tshuva for, even though ultimately it's our free will, but the thoughts that come to our mind and the situations which we find ourselves in, which might trigger us to tshuva, are partially out of our hands. So that's another thing which a person could ask for. That's what we should be thinking about. Maybe we should dive in for insight to be able to help us do tshuva in this issara. There's a lot of things to dive in for. And I think, I think it's good to be thoughtful about that and to try to, think those things through and incorporate those into your tefillah. I think additionally, it's just good for us to think of tefillah as real. I think we don't think of it as real. Sometimes we just think of it as formulaic thing. And when we're in an issara, it's an opportunity to realize tefillah is a real thing. God is there, he's a shomea tefillah, and we have real needs. And what are we going to do? Sit back and wonder and hope and look at the internet. There's something we could do, and which is the only thing we really could do is do tshuva and be in the follow by Kadosh Baruch Hu. And is it going to work? I mean, I don't know. Is it going to work to hope that Trump does this or does that? I mean, this tefillah is still the best we got. Tefillah and Ma'asim Tovim and tshuva is, in a certain sense, the best that we got. We're not in a situation where there's all too much we can do. And in a sense of hopelessness, which is, in a certain sense, and in life in general, we have very little control over. We delude ourselves into thinking we have a lot of control. But this helps us realize the lack of control, and what better state than to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that state of mind. Maybe we could grow in our tefillah through this time.
Can we dive into give chokhmah to the leaders? Is that all you want?
A person could daven for anything, because I think the Shalom also says, like, kol negei libo, anything which plagued your heart. I mean, a person could daven for that for sure. We should have atachon el adam das. You could daven that we'll have the insight and wisdom to be able to lead the world and to show them the derech l'chachma. And I don't think a person thinks what's meaningful to a person, what you feel is the Torah. You turn to God. How are you going to accomplish your tzara? Other than turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, obviously, you use your chachma to the best of your abilities, but then turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the assistance to be able to accomplish it. That's a good idea.
Do you say, by the way, that we can add the Aneinu, for the Eitzara?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't say that.
Okay.
Aneinu is a tefillah for a tainus. I don't know. I'm not sure if you could just add Aneinu for it. So that's for a tainus. So I don't know. Maybe you could. I don't. What's that?
to theory, you explain logically and intellectually what the futility of being wrapped up in the news cycle and having all our energy, you know, going to it. And there's limited practical benefit. But do you have any aids, like any practical, like, you know, how to implement that or how one would avoid that?
I do have an ATO. I think it's like, this is what I do sometimes.
What was the question?
The practical ATO to not get wrapped up in the news cycle. Right? So this is what I think, and this is what I try to do, is that the news is something which, you know, you could argue that it's valuable to know what's going on in the world. And fine. But there's a limited value to that. And what I think is that it's not necessary to know every single second, you know. And to me, if a person knows what's going on in the news, let's say once a day, I mean, you have to pick your time or whatever. But what I try to do is I have a few different places where I look for the news, and I try to, like, look at each of them once a day, you know. And look, I feel like if I see them once a day, then I pretty much know what's going on. Look, now, if there's something pressing which is happening at a moment, it's not like a strict rule. If there's something pressing which is happening and, you know, there's an election happening and, you know, whatever, then maybe, you know, because this is relevant to look more often. But in general, I think if you look at the updates on the coronavirus once a day, you know, or twice a day, whatever, make your time, figure it out. Maybe at a certain time of day, you have a 7 o'clock to 7:30 at night, you have free time. Put it that time. Then pick a time or pick a frequency which you think is a reasonable amount to be engaged in it. And to say, listen, I don't really need to keep checking the news every 5 seconds or every 4 minutes or every time that I, whatever, you know, and have a certain frequency with which you decide is reasonable for you. And again, you don't necessarily have to stick to it religiously, but in general, make it that you check your phone for X at a certain frequency. And that same thing could be for your email. You know, maybe check your emails X times a day, or I don't know, some sort of a system whereby, again, I think what we have this tendency, whenever we get bored, we just decide to just check our email or to check the news or to check whatever. And there's a lot of times, and then, you know, the times which we could otherwise be productive, we just become drawn to it. But if we have some sort of I'm talking purely in a practical ATO type of way, you know, but I'm saying it's just to say I'll check it less doesn't really work. But having some sort of a, you know, guideline or some sort of a rigor, which is, again, I don't think it's necessary to be stuck to it religiously, but I think it's good to try to keep to it as close as you could, you know, and I think that's, you know, helpful. I don't know. What do you think about that? That's just, it works for me. So I'm just, you know, I'm maybe it wouldn't work for everybody.
It's certainly more than just I'm going to do two in an area without any, you know, the alternative work, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's an ASA, you know, and it's not going to be, it doesn't help you work through the area, but it just, if you think about it rationally, I think there's, again, whatever the number is, if you think you need to check it 8 times a day, fine, then do it 8, then they'll do 800. So whatever the number is, but there's got to be an amount where it's rational and you can justify why it's important to do this. And beyond that, and again, maybe it's not necessary, but you like to. Fine, but you don't have to do it if you like to, so spend a certain amount of time on it. But, you know, if it seems too much, we don't have any time to do anything else in life because we're busy stuck on these things. So make a plan, make a strategy, think about it in a real way. If you're really trying to stop something, then make some sort of a schedule. You know, a person who wants to lose weight makes a schedule that they're going to eat X amount of calories and they try to stick to it. Everyone knows that, you know, that was like, again, Rabbi Zimmer is the junk food for the soul. People go on diets. And what's the right diet for a person? I mean, different people have different diets. Some people will, you know, they'll go in an extreme type of a diet. Another person will pick low carb. Another person will do whatever. So again, with this type of thing with the news, maybe a person will go cold turkey for a month. Maybe a person will say, look, I'll do it once a day. Maybe I mean, whatever it is, the person has to think of themselves what's going to work, but make a plan. You're not going to lose weight if you don't make a strategy. And similarly here, I think you're not going to change these things unless you have some sort of a game plan. To say, I'll try to do it less is too vague and doesn't do anything.
So, I was just thinking, based off of our conversation earlier, we were saying that perhaps some of the things that we have in modern times that distract us It's also possible to use them in the reverse, that we know they distract us, but we can also program our phones to not let us do certain things during certain times. And, you know, we can use modern technology in the flip to actually help ourselves if we bother to attempt it.
Definitely. Definitely. That's good. You have, like, you know, people, everyone knows to do this for their kid, to have, let's say, internet filters or to have screen time things, which limit screen time. But, you know, in a sense, we're all kids in this regard. So a person could set things for themselves also, you know, right, for sure. We shouldn't think that that's where we're beneath that. We don't, we're above that. We don't need to really set limits for ourselves. Yeah, there are technologies. There are tons of apps which help you control the content and time that a person's on their phone. So yeah, for sure. That's if we realize we can't control ourselves without that, then that's a good idea. Why do we need the temptation? Why not just have it as, you know, definitely. Those are a lot of good apps like that. Definitely. That's a good idea.
Rebbe Seder?
Yes.
I remember Rebbe said last week that we should be listening to the advice of Based in America or CRC or whoever is instituting fast days and such. Does that mean on days like tomorrow when they say we should be fasting that there are other dinim of a fast day that apply, like saying anenu or or vinim okenu, et cetera?
I don't know. As far as I know, they didn't say a fast day. In Israel, they're having a fast day for half a day tomorrow. As far as I know, I'm sorry, Israel, they're having, oh yeah, Israel, here they're not having a fast day in America. No, they're just having a day of tefillah tomorrow. Am I right? Israel, they're having a half day fast.
I don't know. Maybe it's just Israel.
Yeah, I think Israel's having a half day fast. I think America is just having a yom tefillah. So, but I don't know. It's a good question. To what degree, you know, what degree if people are doing, I mean, like if there's a whole keyboard is doing something, I think it's a good idea to go along with them. But, you know, the particular technical halachos about saying if you know a king or whatever, you have to ask. You know, I think Rebbe said without a tzibur, there's no din. So different people do. But, I mean, if your posik says that there's no din of saying it without a tzibur, then I think that's what you go by, you know? But, again, the particular shiloh is, I don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, but back to that other point, you know, a filter, for instance, is a good example, like a small internet filter or whatever like that. So, again, I think, you know, for kids, most of us, I hope a lot of people have that for kids. And there's no reason why adults shouldn't have that either. You know, that's a good thing, a filter or a time, you know, time limits or whatever it is. Yeah. Any other question?
Yeah. Back to the Mashiach point. Obviously, Jews love calculating for Mashiach, even though they really shouldn't. I recall a shiur that you gave specifically about that area, and at the end of your answer in this discussion, you highlighted that we should always be moving towards Mashiach to whatever degree we can within our daily lives, you know, as a community, ideally. And I'm wondering, to what degree does this, like, complete breakdown of the status quo create some kind of an opportunity that we ought to be thinking more pragmatically about, you know, properly settling our land?
Also, like, how is this, I mean, it's always a good idea, but how does this situation direct us in that way?
Well, if nothing else, remote working is far more of an option today than it was yesterday.
Oh, I see. That's a good idea. Yeah, right. You mean if a person is, so what's prevented a person from making Aliyah is the fact that they say they need to be in work. Maybe they could realize that it's realistic to work remotely. That's a good idea. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole range of things. I think every person has, you know, there's a lot of things which, you know, could come to mind and things that could be a lot of opportunities for us to try to grow in different things and take things seriously, which we don't normally think about. And, you know, when we rock the boat, it causes us to be able to, you know, make different types of changes and, you know, gain insights, which we would ordinarily be able to. Yeah. Okay, good. Anyone else?
Yeah, I had a tip about releasing energy if you're really stuck in the news cycle, which is, you know, that,
say,
I mean, I think...
Can you say it again?
What's that?
Can you say it again? It got cut off.
Yes, I just a tip, a practical tip for another practical, you know, strategy for if you're addicted to the news cycle is that, you know, your energy is going somewhere and it really is very painful and difficult to reroute it. So just blocking it, you know, by stopping it, it might not work for some people. You know, some people, if you have the tip is that if you have a specific alternative thing that you do when you want to look at the news, you know, for example, if there's an interesting, you know, book on science that every time you feel like you want to check the news, read another page in your book. Or if you, you know, or like a learning a language app, every time you want to look at the news, open your app and do another, you know, lesson in learning Spanish or something very specific that you do every time you want to look at the news. It helps you reroute the energy and then it frees it up and then you can actually choose what you want to do after that.
That's a good idea.
But you'll be doing that other thing all the time.
Well, you don't make that other
you get over it. You get over it. It's not, you know, it's just the effort of rerouting energy is very difficult. So if you give yourself a specific task, you know, it could help break the addiction.
Absolutely. Breaking out.
Also, you might learn Spanish.
Yeah, right. You might learn Spanish. It's true. But, you know, I don't think anyone becomes addicted to learning Spanish, you know?
All right.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you, Esty. That's a good point. Good idea.
It works.
Okay, good. Test it.
Try it.
Okay. Okay, anyone else? Okay, so I think it goes without saying that I'm not going to get to this Gemara in Bava Kama tonight. But, you know, maybe next week or something. Okay, so it's been a pleasure. Again, I learned a lot from this conversation. And thank you for participating. It's nice to feel a sense of community that we are all together in this situation trying to grow. And, you know, it's nice to share thoughts with everybody and discuss. And thank you, everybody.
Great. Thanks, Ellie.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. Good job.